Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
We had a veterinary nurse who had a complete breakdown at work. She genuinely believed that people in the TV were talking to her. It's an incredibly difficult situation to navigate, balancing her well-being with the safety of our animals and colleagues. What do we do?
So you could have someone who's struggling with stress, depression, anxiety, and it's really, really important that we don't label these people as being incapable. Everybody has struggles. We don't know what everybody's trying to cope with or trying to deal with. Doesn't mean we've got anxiety just because we're feeling a little bit anxiety. But if you don't move out of your comfort zone, you don't grow, you don't change, you don't develop, your skills aren't going to enhance. That if we stay in our comfort zone, that's where we're staying forever.
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Hero software and employment law consultancy services.
Episode 30-something, I think.
We're past the point of...
Caring.
However many caring. past the point of, what was it, the number that most don't get to?
21.
Yeah, we're way past that, aren't we?
Absolutely.
So we're veterans.
We're up and up.
Veterans at this now.
I think we ended the last one speaking about views on YouTube. And last highest views I checked was about 500-600 views. If we can get met at four figures by sort of the next few episodes, I'll be really happy.
That's just YouTube as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
across
true.
Across all the other platforms that we're on. So we're on Apple. We're on Spotify.
Yeah.
They're the only platforms I use. Are we on Audible?
We work
in. I mean, I do listen to Audible. Audiobooks are my thing, but do you know what? Actually, if audiobooks really were my thing, I should probably see if we're on Audible. But
you should.
Yeah.
We work in tech.
We work in tech. We should definitely know this. We'll clarify for the next podcast. However, we're available on all major podcast platforms. Maybe we should actually get into this one. I'm Alyssa Thursfield. We are HRER. And this is...
Ollie Robinson. We've got another absolute banger of a story today. A little bit something supernatural. Going on.
Well, you're going with supernatural, so you've got your shaman obsession with this one, haven't you?
I have, yeah. That formed the about 5 minutes of our pre-meeting was me looking at.
I think it was most of the podcast preparation was you googling shamans. Anyway, tell us the story.
Let's go. Hi, Alyssa. I've got another challenging HR case for you. We had a veterinary nurse who had a complete breakdown at work. She genuinely believed that people in the TV were talking to her, and her colleagues have taken against her because of the glasses she had on today. It's an incredibly difficult situation to navigate, balancing her well-being with the safety of our animals and colleagues. What do we do?
So, almost sounds too ridiculous to believe. This is someone who was in the throes of a very real breakdown whilst at work. So she believes, so in reception at this veterinary surgery, there's a television in the corner, so... I don't know, the noise helps keep the animals calm and, you know, it's something while you're sat waiting with your chihuahua for, you know, whatever it is you've gone to the vets for, there's a television on in the corner of the room. She was absolutely convinced that there was somebody talking to her through the television and that was telling her to do various things that were frightening her. So really, really sad situation. She'd sort of kept a lid on that. She'd become very, very anxious during the course of the day. And then she went to see her line manager and said that... because of the glasses that she had on, so her reading glasses that she had on that day, that the staff had taken against her and that basically there was a plot against her going on in the workplace. So real sort of paranoid behaviour and delusions that were going on. And again, really, really, really sad situation, really. So by the time they'd come to me for advice and then had gone to go and find her in the workplace, she'd actually locked herself in a cupboard and she was in the throes of a full emotional breakdown as well at that point.
Oh, right.
So what you've got is someone here who is clearly unwell. It's becoming very disruptive in the workplace. There's people who are worried about her, some people who are actually a bit fearful either of or for her, but also we've got members of the public coming in, and also in her role as a veterinary nurse, she has a hands-on role as well. Obviously with clients' animals that are being brought into the surgery. So there's a lot going on here, serious situation. I understand that the person is now quite well, so, you know, it's something that perhaps can talk about in a little bit more of a lighthearted way because we know that she's okay.
Oh, good.
But yeah, what do you do when somebody thinks the TV's talking to them?
That's crazy. I mean, when we went through that in the prep meeting, I didn't even notice the glasses bit. You can maybe see it in my face when I read that out. I was a bit like, glasses. Do you know what I mean? All my focus went on the... Naturally, she was talking to TVs, which is what you're drawn to. But yeah, the glasses thing.
And it was the TV thing that, I suppose, because she was talking back as well. So, and that's in the reception area, obviously, where there's people coming and going. And really, this situation probably been allowed to go on for too long before they then came to me and said, well, what on earth do we do? I'd have said at the point that she's talking to the TV, it's probably time to pick up the phone at that point rather than letting this unfold a bit further.
I guess it depends a bit. Was she talking to the people on the TV or was she talking made
I didn't
up
get
stuff?
That. I don't think she was talking back to the newsreader.
Right. Okay.
If that's what you're asking.
Could forgive that a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, I suppose we all do walk past and go, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Or
we've all spoken to TVs.
We have actually.
You don't expect a response, really, do you?
No, this is true. No, you don't.
They don't come back to you normally. Let's go into the employer perspective. At what point does an employee's mental health crisis become a capability issue rather than a well-being concern?
So in this situation, it was very much capability issue. So just because someone is struggling with a mental health issue doesn't mean that they're not capable of doing their job. So you could have someone who's struggling with stress, depression, anxiety. And it's really, really important that we don't label these people as being incapable. Everybody has struggles. We don't know what everybody's trying to cope with or trying to deal with. And with, you know, measures of support and with the correct referrals, there's absolutely no reason why we can't all get on at work. The work can be done and people can be happy, supported and, you know, thriving at work.
Yes.
That's not a capability issue. This situation was a capability issue. We were very, very concerned that because this woman seemed to have lost grasp on reality, that she could either cause either unintentional or intentional harm, obviously, to the animals that were within the yes. surgery. Or, you know, because when she was doing the talking to the television bit, that if a member of the public were to challenge her, we didn't know if she was going to lash out, because she did become very sort of physical in her movements and was very kind
erratic
of expressive and erratic in the way that she started to express herself, particularly when she felt that she wasn't being believed about the things that she was seeing and hearing. Right. At this point where, one, we can't give this person reasonable management instructions and expect that they're going to be followed, we're then in the realms that this has become a capability issue. And it's important that we do have that empathy, because in previous pods, you'll remember we've talked about the distinction between disciplinary and capability.
Yeah.
And I've said that where somebody won't follow instructions, that's disciplinary. I would say in this situation, if we issue an instruction, she can't follow it. She might think she's doing it intentionally, because she thinks that people have taken against her because of the glasses she's wearing or because the TV's told her to. But the reality is, as objective people, that we know that this is a capability issue rather than her intentionally doing something that she shouldn't be doing. So it's important that we treat it with empathy when we're talking about capability. But where we think that if we give a reasonable management instruction that it can't or won't be followed because of a medical reason, that's when we're in capability territory.
Yeah, I can appreciate it. It'd be difficult for this woman. Like, if you're seeing the world in a certain way and everyone else is saying, no, that's wrong, like, that would be...
And it's going to make you feel worse.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So where, particularly in this situation where we've got that level of paranoia, and that we're not medical professionals, I'm not telling somebody the way to proceed with this and whether it's better to either agree or disagree with someone, but where you've got someone, and I believe this was the case, and this, like, who walked past said, are you mad? What do you think's happening? That's not what you want to be saying to someone who's in the throes of a mental breakdown. It's not exhibiting empathy. And that should always be a starting point, I would say, is kindness, empathy, and patience. That we don't use loaded language, that we don't tell someone that they've lost the plot, they're mad, or we think, you know, that they've lost their marbles. It's, yes, we might all joke in that way down the pub. It's the way that, if we're all honest, that people do talk about various things, but it doesn't mean that either it's acceptable or two, that that's the way that we should deal with people in
no,
work.
No, not to them as well. Especially not.
No,
to,
and I'm also
do it behind the back, of course.
I was just about to say, it's not okay to just, you know, say, oh, I'm very sorry this is happening to you, Doris. She's mental. No, yeah. We don't do that. We don't do that. empathy and kindness and patience is where we come from.
Absolutely.
And particularly in a situation like this. And if you are to say something that's loaded or we use the wrong language, it can be very easy to set somebody off in terms of, you know, a situation becoming worse than it needed to be. People make mistakes. It can be very, very hard to handle situations like this. And, you know, it can be very hard to know whether you're doing the right thing or saying the right things. But I would say if you start with best of intentions, kindness, patience, empathy, it's going to be very difficult to go wrong.
Yeah, definitely. Second question from an employer perspective, how should an employer respond when it does become a capability issue? What steps should they take to lawfully terminate the employment?
So immediate thoughts in this case shouldn't just go straight to termination. So where we've got in the throes of this happening, we need to be thinking what is in the best interest of the welfare of this person, but also our other employees, clients, and obviously because it was a veterinary surgery, the animals as well. So where you've got someone who isn't acknowledging that there's something wrong with them. So she was adamant, I can continue at work. This is fine. That idiot in the TV just needs to stop talking to me and you all need to leave me alone because of my glasses and I'll be fine. Mm. She's like, I can get on with my job. And we're going, well, we're not 100% sure on that. We think that there might be more going on here than perhaps you're either prepared to see or can see. You know, she said to her, this was all real. There's something called medical suspension that we can look at. So this is where we tell an employee, we don't believe that either you're medically well enough or in a situation that's safe enough because of your health to allow you to work. So we're sending you home on medical suspension. So now suspension's a very loaded word. When we've all come out of school, college, university, if you talk about suspension, you've done something very, very wrong. Normally it's a precursor to someone being, you know, expelled or excluded. In the workplace, suspension is a neutral act. It doesn't necessarily mean that you've done anything wrong. So you might not be that a disciplinary follows. It might be that you end up back at work and nothing happens. In medical suspension, it's because the workplace might not be safe for you. Okay. So we send the person home. They are on full pay. This is not a situation where we're not paying this person. So often for an employer who might be cash strapped, it can be quite a difficult decision to make to send somebody home on full pay, not knowing how long they're going to be off for. It's usually to end a medical suspension. We're getting into the realms then of needing doctor's notes, medical opinions, assessments of the workplace, that sort of thing. Another example where it's used is people who are pregnant. So if you've got women who are performing a particularly heavy physical job or people who work with certain chemicals or substances and things like that, once they get to a certain stage of their pregnancy, it's not safe for them to work and they're medically suspended. So
the precautionary.
Yeah, their maternity does. So we do a maternity risk assessment and they end up being sent home. So their maternity doesn't start. They can be at home for months, paid on full pay, and then the maternity leave starts. So
is that's a bit of a pause, this medical suspension, like pause in employment?
No, because your employment continues, your continuity of service continues. Okay. You wouldn't be managed in terms of your performance, your targets, you know, it's, you're at home, you're on, you know, you're on paid leave essentially, but your holidays aren't being taken off you. In this situation, medical suspension, and then we're looking at trying to get a doctor's opinion on what's going on. We wouldn't just be going straight to termination. The exception, I suppose, would be, and it still wouldn't be immediate, we'd still have to be taking reasonable steps, would be if this person then will not cooperate with getting a medical opinion or seeing a specialist or a referral to occupational health. If she continues with the narrative, I'm perfectly well, I want to come back to work, there's nothing wrong with me, we could then potentially look at a capability termination on the basis that on the information that we have available, we do not reasonably think that you're able to do your role for medical reasons. Because you won't allow us to get medical evidence, we can't take the thought process any further on our only available options, termination. But it's so crucial that we take advice before doing that. In this situation, what made it perhaps easier, she wouldn't follow the medical suspension instructions. She kept trying to come back to work. So she kept turning up at work. She was turning up at the building in the middle of the night, trying to get in, thinking it was daytime and that she should be working.
Wow.
So the fallout did continue for a while until ultimately I think she was taken into the care of a medical institution for a while.
Okay, so she was like forcibly held.
I think the family took steps to get involved.
Third question, what legal and ethical considerations come into play when deciding whether an employee in crisis should return to work? That led on quite nicely from that last point.
It did. It's almost like we planned these, doesn't it? Before somebody comes back, I would say in this situation, and it's actually a question I was asked this week. It's something I get asked quite a lot is, we've got someone who's off on sick, and this often happens where you've got someone on SSP, so they're not being paid a huge amount while they're off, and someone decides, you know what, my health might not be 100%, but I want to come back to work because financially it's causing me issues, they'll try and come back. And the question I often get from HR is, can I send them to the GP to ask the GP to sign them fit for work? Generally, GPs don't do that. They sign them off as unfit on a fit note, or they might say that they're fit for amended duties or phased returns, and they'll amend a fit note. But it's, and there's some GPs that will outright refuse to do it, so it's not part of my role to sign you fit for work. That's an occupational health question, if you are fit to do your role, because you need to have an understanding of what the job is. And often what a GP will say is, well, this person tells me that they're okay to return, so who am I to say otherwise? So they kind of sit in this weird grey area where they'll say, well, I want, you know, and this happened a few times, where HR has said to employee, go to the doctor and get signed fit for work. Employee goes to the doctor. Doctor goes, I can't do that. Employee comes back and says, well, the doctor won't sign me fit for work, but I say I'm fit for work. I want to come to work. Now you're refusing to pay me. I'm only getting SSP. And it starts to develop into this toxic situation where you've got someone who says, you're preventing me from coming back to work. My doctor can't help. I'm on SSP. I'm financially worse off. And then that person ends up putting a grievance in. And says,
against the workplace.
Against the workplace, because they're being told that they can't come back to work and they're saying they're fit enough to return. So it ends up in this kind of really horrible cycle.
Yeah.
Where there's a couple of ways around it. We can refer to occupational health, but that takes time. But if somebody says they are fit to return to work, and by all accounts, we've no reason to doubt them, we allow them to return. It might be that we do a return to work meeting with them, where we say, can you confirm that you feel well enough to do all of these things? And that we talk through the reasons for their absence and what their expectations for the role are, and have them sign to say, I am confirming that I am fit enough to return to the workplace. Because then if it turns out that they're not, that employee is going to be hard pushed to blame you for allowing them to come back to work. If they come in and they are clearly not well enough, we're then in this situation where it's, do we medically suspend? Because remembering, if we medically suspend, we've got to send them home on full pay. Whereas if they were signed off sick and we don't provide full sick pay, they'd only be on SSP. So, and I have had this where employees have been a bit strategic. They understand, they've realised what medical suspension is.
Okay.
And think, if I get myself back into the workplace and I'm clearly not well enough and not safe to be there, that I can get myself medically suspended.
Oh, it's a long game play, isn't it?
It's a long game. It's very risky as well. Very risky. So it's then that situation where you've got somebody and it's the decision, well, how then, if we've got someone who's clearly not well enough to be here, they could be in the throes of the flu, and they're sneezing everywhere and they're blowing their nose on their sleeve and they've got the phlegm and everything and they're not washing their hands. And you just think, we do not want you here because you're just going to give it to everybody. That at which point we say, and how we send them home. So it is, again, back to policies. If your policy says that if we reasonably consider that you're not well enough to be in the workplace and you've attended anybody, it's within our power to ask you to attend home and go and see your GP. So we've kind of got that window to say to them, go and see your GP. But it's a really sticky situation, and it's a really sticky. It's one of those where actually we don't have a clear answer. We judge every matter on its facts, remember. We've got to be reasonable in our responses. So if you have got someone who says they're well enough to be at work, they're clearly not, they won't go see their GP, you don't want to be medically suspended, that's when you need to be picking the phone up. We're briefing our advisors, really, because there's a lot of moving parts there. And you could well have someone who either is being strategic, or they could be on their last warning in terms of, if you're absent from work again, because your attendance has been so shocking, you're going to be in a formal capability situation, your employment might be terminated. That employee might be hanging on to their employment for dear life and thinking, I don't care what's wrong with me, I'm coming in. Because I've been told if I'm off again,
I've got to be in.
I'm gonna lose my employment. Mm. So there's loads of catch-22s going on in that situation. So it's a really, really messy one. So it's important that we do pick the phone up and get advice if we're in that situation.
Get your ducks in a row, people. Last question as an employer. How can managers be trained to spot and sensitively handle mental health issues? Aren't we doing e-learning on this? Is that a thing we're doing?
We are going to be doing some e-learning on this.
That's coming.
It is. So we've got sexual harassment at the moment. I think DE&I is coming. Mm-hmm. And we are going to do some stuff on mental health and bullying as well. So we are going to do some stuff around this. But we've got to remember that HR and most people at work are not mental health professionals. You might have mental health first aiders who are there to support and signpost, but they're not there to diagnose. So what I would say here is, one, make sure that we have really decent policies around mental health from the first instance, so people know what help is available to them, that where the safe place or people are that they can go and disclose these things to. As a company as well, if we've got mental health first aiders, making sure that they are supported in their roles. It's not just that we're training them up and leaving them to it. So EveryMind, who we do loads of great content with and that we work with, they've got some really, really good stuff around supporting. Yep, Paul McGregor. So we had him on as a guest. Around supporting mental health first aiders and making sure they're okay as well, because they can kind of get forgotten about. But then for individuals, it's things like noticing changes in behaviour, personality changes. If people are acting, you know, slightly differently, might be more introvert, might be more extrovert. You know, there might be changes in their appearance. Again, we're not doctors. We're not looking to diagnose. But just from a welfare perspective, these are people that you see and work with all the time. If you notice something that you think is a bit off, it's a case of potentially talking to your line manager or HR and saying, can someone just check in on them? You don't need to say, oh, I think they're in the throes of a breakdown. You say, can someone just make sure they're all right? Mm-hmm. You know, so we're just flagging it. We're not passing any judgment. We're not diagnosing. It's just flagging to somebody more senior. I think there might be something going on here.
You're caring, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's all it is, a bit of care.
It's one of those difficulties with remote working. And again, we're not getting into the argument over the pros, cons, whatever. I went down that rabbit hole on LinkedIn lately.
Don't
do it. Not for, not against. I do hybrid,
yeah,
you know, work both. Very remote, do everything, whatever.
Who cares?
We're not going there. But from a welfare perspective, it's harder to make connections on a remote basis.
Oh, of course, yeah.
It just is. It's harder to pick up on tells if someone isn't quite themselves. Mm. Because it can be very easy to mask when you're on camera or keep your camera off, or to be very quiet in a meeting where actually you don't feel like you've got much to say. There's lots of ways that we can kind of hide that we're not okay when we're not seeing someone face to face. So it's really then important that as line managers and HR, that where we are working in that remote environment, that we have got the tools at our disposal to be checking in with people, to make sure we're having those welfare meetings, that we're not just holding, you know, Teams meetings with people when it's just all about business, that we have got those opportunities for people to connect and build those relationships so that we're more likely to be able to spot when something's wrong.
Like you say, it's only something that can be built in person. I feel like you can't look at someone on Teams and go, you know, that you're in a bad mood. I bring up a lot, but Michael walked in the office last week and it was first thing in the morning. And he looked at me and he goes, what's wrong with you? You've got a face like a afflicted bottom. He didn't use the afflicted bottom. He used something a bit more, you know. But he used that. And I was in a bit of a bad
mood. I think
mood
for the language we use on here, you can probably say smacked ass. I think we're all right.
All right. He said, you've got a face like a smacked ass. And I said, have I? And I was in a bit of a, I'm not a morning person. I was in a bit of a solid mood. But he picked a point.
Had you not had your four relentless drinks that morning?
I hadn't opened one yet.
Or Monsters, what is it that you drink? Not that we're affiliating with any energy drinks. If we were, it'd be Red Bull, but whatever.
Yeah, the dead bad fear and that. But we drink a lot of them, don't we? I was in a bit of a bad mood, but he picked up on it. He would not say he was concerned about it, because he's somewhat robotic, isn't he? But yeah, he picked up on it as a fine example of that, like building them bonds in person, you know. For the arguments pro and con, I am a big fan of working in person.
Yeah, and I think...
At least a bit.
I think so for me, you know, I come into the office a couple of times a week. I mean, it is a 60 mile round trip, so it's a long way. We're ludicrously busy at the moment. Mm-hmm. And when I was in the other week, had to head down, get on with work. Michael does the whole, everything all right this week? Been very quiet. So he does. He does the check-ins.
He does check-ins.
We're going to embarrass him.
emotional sometimes.
But it is. I mean, I've got a very close friend who on a Wednesday, we do a Wednesday waffle.
Okay.
Which is where you don't do a video call, you take a video recording and you waffle away for 2 or 3 minutes about your day, your week, whatever. And we do it every week, Wednesday waffle. I send her hers and she sends me hers back. But you don't watch the other person's until, so you know, it's not a reply, it's not a conversation. You have an independent waffle and you swap them.
Okay.
And I know this person very, very well. We are very, very close. Mm-hmm. And we both, every week, we'll be like, oh yeah, I just look dreadful this week or whatever. And you think, oh, you know, it's still very hard, even with someone you know very well on a video, to properly
to see it.
Assess how somebody is. We both constantly look tired. She's a teacher and she's got two kids, and I drive a million miles a week and do the job of three people. You know, we both just look wrecked all the time. But it's very hard, even with people that you know on a virtual basis, it's very, very hard to work out actually, is someone just a bit tired or fed up, or is there something a lot deeper going on? So it's really important that we do make that time. We do have those check-ins. But yeah, Wednesday waffles are a great thing.
That's a new thing. I mean, we only found out today that Alex told us there's different like filters on the cameras from the TV or something. So we look different on the TV to what we do on the monitor in there.
So, I mean, I always get told I look really tired on these, which must mean I look absolutely dreadful if there's a filter on the TVs.
Employee perspective, quick, we'll rattle through these. If I'm struggling with my mental health at work, how can I ask for help without fear of losing my job?
So we should never be worried about losing our job if we're asking for help around mental health. So, I mean, firstly, from an employer perspective, we want to make sure that we have got those safe reporting and disclosure lines in place, that line managers are told that we should never be belittling people or making them feel like, you know, they're not coping or they're going to be judged at work. So having policies around mental health and making sure we're implementing training, which is why this is something that we're going to be introducing for the e-learning. And it's something that when I go out and deliver the training in person, it's again, something that we look at. So if you're not comfortable, it might mean that, you know, when you go and speak to line manager or HR, whoever you decide to speak to, you might want to take somebody with you. So whether that's, you know, a colleague that you trust, or perhaps someone in HR, if you've been speaking to HR, someone that you trust there. There's absolutely no harm in going to see HR first and just kind of going, look, if I wanted to talk to somebody about this and I'm nervous and I'm not sure how to disclose it, ask them for some guidance. They're going to hopefully know the business and the people within it well enough to direct you to the person that you should be speaking to if it isn't themselves. It might be as well that they're able to signpost you to various support. And if it's stuff that the company doesn't actually pay for, there's lots of free support out there that HR may be able to direct you to. So Mind, for example, is a brilliant charity. It's free. There's lots of support and resources on the website, and HR is going to be able to direct you to various measures of support, whether or not it's paid for or not.
Second question, what are my rights if my employer decides if I'm unfit for work due to a mental health condition?
So we've kind of covered this when we were talking from the employer perspective. So when we were talking about that medical suspension. So medically suspended, you've got the right to be paid full pay. Now, where we've got a situation where, say, for example, you don't agree that you should be medically suspended, or you think your medical suspension should stay in place, so you don't want to return, it's really, really important that you do cooperate with what it is that your employer is asking you to do. So if you're asked to go for medical assessments, if you're asked to go see your doctor, if a referral to occupational health is made, if you don't cooperate, then there is a decent chance that if the employer is not sure if you're capable of doing your job, that you could head down the road towards termination. So whilst it may feel like, well, my health is none of their business, but actually, if your health links to your capability, it is part of their business. And you may well have a clause in your contract of employment that says that you will cooperate when it comes to medical investigation. So it's really important that you understand what's in your contract. If you're being referred to something and you don't know why, and that's why you're not cooperating, ask those questions. Why do you want me to see occupational health? What is occupational health? And what are they going to do? Who am I going to speak to? You know, make sure that you're schooled up on what's happening. Don't just dig your heels in and say no to everything. Have those conversations, collaborate with your employer, understand what's going on, and then try and cooperate.
It's always going to be a difficult conversation, isn't it? Like, especially if you haven't had a conversation regarding mental health with your employer before, if it's like the first of, and they see you as this sort of bright spark, and there's no wrong with them, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's going to be a strange, and I suppose you don't want them to see you in a different way. You know, if you're seen to be the life and soul of the place, and then they suddenly think that you're down in the dumps all the time, or, you know, that they're going to be like, oh, you know, don't set them off or things like that. You know, that shouldn't be happening. But I think we are seeing more people prepared to talk about it.
Definitely, yeah.
But also, I think we're seeing more people prepared to work on resilience. So there's been this big movement in the press lately around the attitude towards, you know, normal life challenges and normal life problems, and that we don't over-medicalize everything. And a lot of the training that I go out and do, particularly with young professionals in the legal and accountancy professions, is around resilience. So how we can work through normal life challenges, that it is normal to feel, you know, when you're doing something out of your comfort zone, it's normal to feel uncomfortable, a little bit afraid, a little bit anxious. Doesn't mean we've got anxiety just because we're feeling a little bit anxiety. But if you don't move out of your comfort zone, you don't grow, you don't change, you don't develop, your skills aren't going to enhance. That if we stay in our comfort zone, that's where we're staying forever.
Yeah. And nothing good happens there either, do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Nothing special happens in your comfort zone. It just doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much world out there. There's so many skills. There's so much to experience that we're going to lose out on if we lose this ability to push out of our comfort zone. And one of the big things that I talk about in training is getting used to that feeling of discomfort. Recognize it, embrace it, and think, actually, you know what? I'm at the point where this is where the power comes.
If you can lean into that.
Yeah, feel it's a positive thing, you know? And I think of all the things that I've managed to work through, and it's then something that helps to fuel you. Think, well, if I can do that, I can do anything.
I'll use it as an example, yeah. As well, if you think as well, like if you're doing something that you're a bit anxious about, for lack of a better word, or you're fearful, during that moment of feeling like, whoa, what am I doing? You're probably not going to feel sad.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Because you're like, well, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a bit unsure. I'm a bit off balance. Yeah. You're not going to feel sad. It's a growing experience as well. Do you know what I mean? You grow from it without a doubt.
Yeah. I remember when I was a junior lawyer and it was one of the first tribunals that I'd done. So I'd been on my feet in tribunal. I'd had a dreadful morning with the judge. I'd been shouted at. I'd been embarrassed in front of my clients. I mean, in hindsight, the judge probably overstepped.
Okay. You didn't know then, though.
They are there to judge. That's what they do. But even so, you still don't really answer back, even if they are out of line. And I remember we'd taken a break and I was in the stairwell. And I remember like stood like my head against the wall thinking, how am I going to go back in there? I just cannot do this. And I gave my head a wobble. And I remember it was the middle of winter. It was really bloody cold outside. And I remember being hot and I was sweating in this hallway. And I remember the weekend before I'd been out on a lifeboat call out. And it was stormy. It was dark. It was raining. And our lifeboat goes out. You know, we don't have a roof. It's a rigid inflatable. It's a rib.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I went out and did something that in all reality could have killed me.
Yeah, oh God, yeah.
I can go in there and if the judge wants to tear a strip off me, well, fine. It's just words.
You've put your life at risk. You know what I mean?
And I think, you know what? If I can do that, I can sit in there and just kind of with a straight face and just take it if I need to. Mm-hmm. In the end, we won the case. Like it was probably one of the most memorable judgments I ever got because it was so good.
It was like a comeback type thing. Do you know what I mean? Like you were down and then you
finished
strong.
Yeah. Nice. But having that point of strength to come from, to think, well, if I can come through this, I can definitely do this.
It's having like a undeniable stack of things in your life that you are what you say you are. That's confidence.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And I heard another good one recently, which is we've all got the capability. You've just got to go and find it. It's there.
Yeah.
You've got the ability to do it. You've just got to go and claim it.
Definitely. Final question as an employee. Can my employer force me to take time off or undergo an occupational health assessment?
So we've kind of addressed that yes, when we've got that reasonable basis to believe that someone isn't capable of doing their role or they're medically, there's an issue that makes them either unsafe or unfit to work, we can refer them either for occupational health or medical assessment. But an employee does have to agree. So if an employee doesn't agree, then they're potentially tying themselves up in knots because it limits as an employer what we can do with them. Mm-hmm. We could well be then on the road to termination. But then we have got that ability to medically suspend as well, which I'm an advocate of it because it gives people time to cool off. To get out of the situation, sort of both of you back to your corners.
Yeah.
You go home on full pay and you watch Jeremy Kyle. It's not on anymore, is it?
Got cancelled, mate.
You go and watch With Love, Megan or whatever the rubbish is that's on Netflix at the moment. You guys get on with work for now and go and read your policies and work out what we can and what we can't do. And then maybe we have a meeting to discuss the way forward. If we do things in the throes of when emotions are heightened and things are going on, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to say things that we regret. We're going to do that thing where I say, don't send an angry email. We go home and sleep on it. We take that breath, we take a step back, and then we reconvene and go through it. So in the situation, the very sad situation we've been talking about where we've got someone who's talking to the TV, maybe don't get in a stand-up argument with that person at that point. It's probably not the best thing to do. Medically suspend. Give it a couple of days and then see maybe if they want to talk in a neutral environment. It might also be the workplace isn't the best place to be doing these things. It
might be the cause of stress, you know.
Costa Coffee is a favourite. I mean, other coffee shops are available. But I always get asked, can we go and do this in a Costa Coffee? No one ever suggests Starbucks. And I don't know why.
I thought you were a Starbucks gal, no?
No, it's a bit bitter for me.
Okay.
I always end up having to put too much sugar in all the blonde roast. I do prefer Costa.
Okay.
Though, actually, I'm going to say it's my local coffee shop, Two Islands Coffee. Oh, best coffee
them
in the world.
Independent chain ones are
so
always the best.
So good. And the cakes. Oh, my goodness. But off topic. But yeah, I'm always asked, can I do this in a Costa Coffee? You can do it in a Starbucks if you want. It's, you know, doesn't have to be a Costa, but it's always a Costa.
Closing thoughts. So what happened here and what were your sort of thoughts on it, if you don't mind?
So we did medically suspend. As I say, it was a sad situation where she ended up being taken into a medical care facility, said that the family got involved. So the situation kind of played itself out in that when we got medical opinion, this wasn't going to resolve itself anytime soon. And the family were actually, even though they were speaking on her behalf, which in itself carries risk because it's not the person we've contracted with, they acknowledged she wasn't going to be coming back for a significant period of time. So we did undertake a capability termination, which isn't without risk because this was done in her absence without a meeting. All the red flags that we advise against, but it was just one of those impossible situations. So it could have been something actually that we could have looked at under SOSR, which, spoiler, is coming next. That the employer did proceed with capability because they said, look, our genuine belief here is that she is not capable of doing this role. She's not going to be coming back. But SOSR could have potentially been another possible outcome for us here.
We like SOSR, don't we? I only learned that. You're the only person to ever said that to me. Like, I've learned that term from you.
Yeah, you're also the only person I know who calls it saucer, but there we go.
We'll get into that next episode. That's it. That's all I've got time for today. Thank you for your time and input as ever. I like to think I actually learn things during these.
I think you do, because I think your questions are getting more insightful and you're getting the terminology as well. As always, thank you everyone for listening, downloading, subscribing, and we will see you in the next one.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.